Though based on documented history, the following is a work of fiction. Please be aware, this episode contains adult themes, including imprisonment and execution. Historic Royal Palaces, in association with Rusty Quill, present Outliers, stories from the edge of history. Episode 13, For King and Country, by Jonathan Sims.
Good evening, gentlemen. Please, don't rise. No need to stand on ceremony. And don't trouble yourselves with my name. History certainly hasn't. To be honest, history hasn't been desperately kind to any of us, has it? So perhaps it's best for all of us that I remain a stranger. It's a sorry place you find yourself in, is it not? Cold stone dripping from the rain, and such a somber hush upon the place. Atmospheric, to be sure, but not desperately comfortable, I'd wager. Of course, I'd love to speak to you directly, but in the Tower of London there are precautions that must be taken, I'm sure you understand. And so we must be content to talk through this grate. Well, I shall talk. You will listen. And perhaps, like so many before, you will remember the words even as you forget the speaker. I've come to convince you to confess, to throw yourselves upon the mercy of the court-martial. You're hesitant, I know, but eventually you'll agree. I clearly have a way with words. Perhaps I appeal to your sense of duty, your love of good King George, and the dishonour you might bring on yourselves and your clan. Point out that such mutinies as these over pay or conditions are not uncommon and rarely punished with any real harshness. No doubt the cordial treatment you've seen since you arrived at the Tower and the calm reassurance of the guards has served to ease your worries. No doubt this all was simply a misunderstanding, and you might still emerge with your heads held high. Well, except for poor fevered Campbell, casting himself from the tower like that to drown in the soft, silty mud. Goodness only knows how he was able to do so. Perhaps the guards were simply negligent. I wouldn't think on it too long. No one else ever does. He's barely a footnote to a footnote, and he was always given over to dramatics, wasn't he? Such an ignoble end for a company like the Black Watch, wouldn't you say? The pride of Scotland, scourge of the Highland Jacobites, defending your country from the king over the water, lest James or Bonnie Prince Charlie return to steal it back. Except there haven't really been any Jacobites around for a good long while, have there? None that did more than murmur, at least. The Black Watch has certainly been watching. But even those clans who keep to their secret papistry simply haven't been giving you much to do, have they? Your regiment was formed with promises and oaths that it would never have to leave the Highlands, that it was purely called upon to defend your beloved home. But it is hard to ignore that there's been little to defend it from. Some might even have called it a waste of strong Scottish warriors. So it's only natural that certain rumours start flying when the order comes to march and present yourselves before His Majesty King George II. You are betrayed. They have lied to you. You're going to be sent to fight in Flanders, or even all the way to the West Indies, across waters far greater than those travelled by any king. Surely not. They had promised you. But such promises seem thinner the further south you march, don't they? And the assurances of English lords ring softer than the boom of the Flanders cannons, which get closer with every step. Whose idea was it to turn around? Who first proposed returning to Scotland? It certainly wasn't you, Shaw, or you, Malcolm. Did you suggest such a thing, Samuel? Perhaps. I can't see a hint of defiance in you. But truth be told, I don't believe any of you three ringleaders caused the mutiny any more than the pebble causes the avalanche. Could it even be called mutiny? Desertion? Perhaps. Perhaps you argued that you were simply abiding by the agreement made with your company when it was raised that you were not to leave the Highlands, and you hoped His Majesty would understand. Or perhaps you knew all along, deep down, what you were doing, and decided that facing the Tower's firing squad was a better fate than to die of disease and mud-caked violence in a land that was not your home. Your reasons don't really matter, though, do they? No more than my name. Lost to the swell and crest of history, the relentless flow that wears all those rough edges into smooth, clean stories. Private Farquhar Shaw, bold ringleader of the Black Watch Mutiny. Or a scared young man pinned as a troublemaker after getting into a fight with a sergeant. Corporal Malcolm MacPherson, spreading rumours of betrayal and desertion, or simply standing by his cousin in advising surrender to the English forces when they finally caught up to you. Out of you all, only Samuel MacPherson actually admits to suggesting the regiment return to Scotland. But even he denies there was any real leader. The court-martial will remember that, you know. Like true Highlanders, the records say, all denied that they had any leader. And surely the court-martial would understand. No one had told you anything. It was all conjecture, merely rumour. No one knew for sure what the King's order was going to be when you arrived. Perhaps he was simply going to dispatch you right back north again. The advice I give is to keep your complaints to yourself, to trust in your king and let God's will be done. And you take that advice, even though in the end it doesn't save you. They shoot you for deserting your king, when the alternative was deserting your country. For what is a king if not the bridge between our country and our God? A divinely appointed head to look down upon us and guide us in wisdom and grace. A nation incarnate, whose will and desire is that of all who dwell within it. So, if he were to tell you that your best duty to Scotland lies far across the sea, to be Britain's boot on the throat of a colonized land, in the sweltering heat of Jamaica, who are you to say that is not God's will? Or would you have it that your country is your own, a thing of peasants and clansmen who live and breathe and fight without any real thought of kings? When the Jacobites in their secret meetings toast to the king over the water, are they toasting a bitter old man rotting away in France, dreaming of second-hand glories never to be inherited from a nation his father once ruled? Or are they toasting their own lost pride, the communities and beliefs that bind them, the words of a holy mass they still speak secretly together in defiance of those who would stop them? In many ways, they have it so much easier, don't they? These plotting, seditious traitors. A king in exile is simply an idea, a distant figure to be moulded and shaped to whatever form fits neatly inside a heart. We have the harder task, for the man in whom we see our statehood, the king who rules us with divine authority and in whose power we must trust and believe, is a man who makes actual decisions. We do not have the luxury of imagining his desire for whatever we feel the country needs.
We must instead contend with his decrees and his all too human choices. It's strange to me how much trust you still have for a ruler who seems to have no sort of care for you. No doubt you say he has been swayed by some advisor, or he may simply be unaware of your situation. If he knew your plight, he would of course be outraged. He would do something. You just wanted to serve your country. It's on these thoughts I play, of course, with my honeyed stranger's words. Of course the king would wish the court-martial to have mercy on you, and mercy is what you will receive, I say, if you keep your peace and speak no word against the officers who have treated you so poorly and broken the promise to keep you a Scottish regiment. Such sweet lies I tell you, and eventually, despite it all, trust wins through, and you listen to me. Perhaps if you mentioned the assurances you'd given of Highland service, or raised the complaints against your officers, then it might go better for you. But you won't, and it doesn't. You sit there waiting for my words to bear fruit, for my advice to yield clemency, but instead the word the judges speak is death. Death for the ringleaders, death for Macpherson, Macpherson and Shaw. The verdict is heard in silence, your stoicism and your pride not allowing any cry of protest. King George does not save you, nor does he spare a single thought for your fate. If it's any consolation, you face the Tower's executioners with a dignity that few can muster. The Reverend Campbell notes your Christian composure and resignation of mind as you kneel before the guns. Samuel speaks words of hope to the men of the Black Watch, optimistic in securing their freedom through your unpleasant deaths and exhorting them to honour his sacred majesty. You die with the words king and country on your lips. Perhaps the conflict between the two passes through your mind just a moment before the shot does. I'm sorry. That was cruel of me. We're all slaves to history in the end. And the place our steps lead us is never clear when we walk them. You can't know, of course, what happens after your execution, but I assure you, it is not the liberty that you believed yourselves dying for. The rest of the Black Watch suffers the exact fate they so dreaded. They are dissolved. Your comrades scattered to a dozen other regiments in England, Flanders, and yes, even the West Indies. They suffer and die on that foreign soil that so appalls them, far from the fair winds of Scotland. Of course, there's every chance this is what His Majesty had always intended for them, and your deaths made no difference at all, but it is seen by many as further punishment for their mutiny, and that, far from saving the Black Watch, your confession gave the means for its destruction. There are many who call it a betrayal of you, of your comrades, and of Scotland. And you know the funniest thing? For almost 20 years, the Watch has stood vigilant against the Jacobites. You stalwart lads of loyal clans prepared to quash another rising with speed and ferocity. But 30 years after the rebellion of 1715, do you know what ultimately helps rally their treasonous cause and convinces many of the clans to stand with them for another doomed revolt? The Crown's betrayal of the Black Watch, the executions of Macpherson, Macpherson, and Shaw, and the dissolution of the regiment. Such an act could come from no rightful king who truly respected Scotland. And many joined the Jacobites in a perverse protest over the betrayal of those who would oppress them. Your deaths for king and country helped to strike a wound between the two that will never fully heal. The holy authority of a British king becomes the cruel yoke of the English crown. It won't stop there either, I'm afraid. It never does when we become part of a story larger than ourselves. The 45 Rebellion is too successful for the comfort of the throne, and though stoked by scheming English Tories, it is, of course, the Scots who bear the cost. And the steps the English take to finally destroy the clans render your beloved home a different land within a generation. Is this your fault? Is it mine? What weight of history can be put on a testimony of two ill-fated corporals and a private? How much on the advice of a stranger? For who can truly account for the course of even our own small stories, let alone the fate of nations? A failed rising, a bloody battle, a heroic stand, such things history is made of. A thousand threads converging into a grand change. But perhaps some threads are deeper buried than others. And perhaps for just one moment, a nation's destiny rested on the advice of an unnamed stranger to a trio of doomed men who chose their king over their country. Good night, gentlemen. Sleep well. And dream of Scotland.
Today's episode was written by Jonathan Sims and performed by Roger Barclay, with introduction and credits by Helen Gould. It was produced by Alexander J. Newell, Adam Sibbald, and Claudia Strange, and directed by Alexander J. Newell. The main theme and accompanying music was composed by Samuel D.F. Jones. If you've enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Contact us through social media via @HRP_palaces or @TheRustyQuill using the #OutliersPod. For more information, visit hrp.org.uk/learning or www.rustyquill.com. This podcast was created by Historic Royal Palaces in association with Rusty Quill and is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. Thank you for listening.